The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Wanted to catch you up on that fish hatchery story. Betty first mentioned it to me, and a boss ended up passing this along. That actually wasn't, it was out on the coast, really. Young Chinook poisoned at Lower Umpqua Hatchery, and the Northwest Sportsman reporting that, and the sheriff there is investigating. Thousands of young hatchery fall Chinook salmon ended up dying at a site on Oregon's central coast, apparently the victim of someone deliberately poisoning them late last weekend. And a gallon of bleach was dumped in the tank, apparently. 20,000 nice fat little Chinook gone, lamenting Rick Rockholt of the Gardner Reedsport Winchester Bay Salmon and Trout Enhancement Program this afternoon. Sheriff, once again, looking into that. It's about one-fourth to one-fifth of the Chinook being raised at that facility. So that sets him back pretty seriously. But once again, Sheriff, looking into that. Gallon of bleach, that's all it took. 16 after 7, let me go to Todd Farco, who is in Central Point and ended up going to a Jackson County for All meeting a few days ago. He's going to report on that. But you wanted to comment on what Dr. Stephen Greenleaf and I were kicking around first here, having to do a communist seizure of property, of private property, because your family experienced this firsthand. Is that right, Todd?
Hey, good morning. Yes, that Dr. Zhivago scene struck a chord with me and my grandparents. My dad's parents emigrated from Romania in the early 20s. And they, of course, they maintained contact as they could with the family back there. And they certainly weren't rich, but after the Soviets absorbed the Eastern Bloc, their property was confiscated, and what humble things they had, like their small house, they shoved several families into it. So it's been done before. And one other scene that sticks to my mind from Dr. Zhivago is the scene where Alec Baldwin, who's the kind of the secret police guy, he's trying to reason with his doctor. Dr. Zhivago, his family member, who's so noble and a poet and all this stuff. And he stops him in mid-sentence and says, you know, I've killed better men than myself.
Yikes.
That's a great movie.
Yeah, it is.
Also, before you go on, you mentioned the eco-terrorism stuff. I was a ranger in the Santa Cruz Mountains, and we had those guys all over there, too. And they were trying to kill the fish stock, and they were doing more than that. They were blowing stuff up. So yeah, this is not new.
what's the purpose then of destroying fish stock like this? Are they just wanting natural salmon? Is that what it is? Or
obviously, Bill, you do not listen to enough NPR. They're obviously breeding genetic mutants. Those are not natural fish, and they're trying to destroy the environment. Other than that, I can't really climb inside their head any more than that.
Okay, these hatchery fish have little nanobots within them that are going to, you know, attack us or what?
Their belief is that they're not natural, that these are some form of the cattle that we eat, that they're mutants and that they're, you know, they're manipulated by people and they're not natural, free range, wonderful. And, you know, I don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah. Well, I was told that they were genetically identical to the wild, but they were raised differently though. It's a different environment. So I would imagine there could be some differences in behavior. Is that a possibility given? That's why we talk about we have wild salmon, Steve, rather than hatchery raised Steve, who calls the show, you know?
Exactly. And and again, I'm not trying to make reasonable arguments on their behalf, but, you know, we talk about the food that they're fed, the environment that they're raised in. I even have fellow ranger, ex-ranger friends who believe that stuff. So it's out there.
Okay. All right. Well, it's good to know. So let's circle around to the Jackson County for All meeting that you went to a few days ago, apparently, and you were taking some notes.
Yeah, that was a week ago Tuesday. I saw a flyer in Jacksonville, and it was over at the Jacksonville Library. And I'm going to start with my synopsis, actually. My takeaway was it was a wolf in sheep's clothing. They're trying to portray themselves as being fiscally, being for a fiscal accountability, transparency and county proceedings and better accessibility to commissioners. And they also claim to be against partisanship. And my fear is those might resonate. That would resonate with you. That would resonate with me. You know, oh, that's so wonderful and everything. And I think that they're going to try to suck in a few independent and Republican votes to drag this garbage across the finish line. But going back to the meeting, it was only about 15 people. I didn't know what to expect. I guarantee you I was the only conservative there. And the presenter was, like you said, Laura Baskerville Ahern. And I've done public speaking when I worked for the state of California. And typically, and I'm sure you've done it a million times, you kind of give a little background on yourself so the audience connects with you. And she really didn't do much of that. All I could find out is that she moved out to the Applegate in 2017. And in her email to you, she mentioned she was a widow. Okay. All right. And that her motivation, her key motivation was just her concern about the animal shelter and the public libraries, and that the county wasn't responsive to her. And that's what got her to dig in her heels.
Uh-huh.
Well, yeah, you know, anytime somebody mentions libraries, you know, I get suspicious. But it turns out, like we know, she was an environmental law person. She attended Stanford. She lived in D.C. for a while. And I found one teeny little reference, and this is not, you know, necessarily nefarious or negative or anything like that, but she was appointed by the Oregon Judicial Department to assess foster care. So that might be great. It might be wonderful, but it shows that she's very politically involved and connected.
Yeah, she's connected. You know, she made her bones with the Democrat mob. Okay, there we go.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing wrong with that. That's how you get ahead in the state of Oregon. And she's very intelligent, very smart. I would never
sharp as a tack.
I would never knock the people who are pushing this as far as their intelligence. But we just have to understand is that you know, wolf in sheep's clothing. Their whole idea is to fool people under fiscal, oh, we're going to be prudent and fiscally conservative and this and that and the other, which is the first time I've ever heard, you know, people from the leftist center really all that concerned about it, because you can always tax people more is usually the way they tend to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
But be that as it may, that's not the goal. The goal is to get five commissioners so that they can have five district commissioners at some point. So that way they're able to get a better political outcome for their point of view. And so they're not able to win on a countywide vote the way things have been done forever here in Jackson and Josephine County. It's pretty simple, I figure.
Well, you know, if they had just said that at the outset and said, look, you know, Democrats are a significant population in this county, and they need more representation, I would have totally been on, not that I'm on their side politically, but I would have understood that. I would have respected that.
It would have been an honest statement coming from
exactly.
them, but this is just a fraud they're trying to do by hiding it behind, well, we're going to give you more for less, and it's more democracy, and we're just going to have, and we're going to have part-time commissioners who are going to be, have more of a long-term focus. I don't know how you do that. You get backbenchers on the commission, and then it's going to be a better outcome. It's really interesting.
It was a beautiful PowerPoint, very well researched. Of course, it was like a lawyer presenting a case. Of course, all biased towards their client.
Sure,
but she went through the three different ones, and of course, the first one is the nonpartisan part. And I guarantee you, nobody in that audience was nonpartisan. But she showed an interesting graph, and this was very telling. She was showing how the different registration of people in the county and how both Republican and Democrat numbers have been going down,
right.
But unaffiliated has been going up. So unaffiliated is the largest group, followed by Republican, and right behind them is Democrat. So obviously they just see that, oh gosh, we can just peel away a few of those unaffiliated will, you know, outstrip the Republicans.
Now, there's a lot of reason for that. People have been you know, irritated at partisan politics with the left and the right. There's no doubt about that, and been somewhat disenchanted. But there's also been the massive increase in voter registration from motor voter. right? And they and we're talking about kids that are put into that hopper right now. They're not going to mention that. I get it. But the thing is, there's nothing that's stopping a non-affiliated candidate from running for county commission right now. Nothing stops them. They don't do it. They can
do it. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mean auto fraud? And but she was talking about. I'll throw out some of her arguments. Mm-hmm. 29 of the 36 counties in Oregon vote nonpartisan. Like in my opinion, is so what? And she did say something kind of quickly that gave me insight into her, and she said, let the voters figure out the politics of the candidates. Well, wait a minute. Weren't we just talking about transparency 1 second ago?
Yeah, that's exactly why they want nonpartisan, because it's exactly non-transparent. You have people that it's easier to fool you. You have to do a lot more research. People have enough trouble trying to figure out what half these people are doing when they're running for an office, you know?
And so that kind of covered the first measure. And then the second measure has to do with expanding the number of commissioners. And she touted some facts, of course. You know, since 1853, we've had three commissioners. And obviously the population has grown exponentially since then. So come on, you know, we need more people. You know, I grew up in Los Angeles. Los Angeles County has north of 10 million people in it. From the 1850s until today, they only have five county supervisors. Somehow they've managed to make it work in their own way.
So. Isn't that fascinating? So if you were to take Ahern's argument at its face value, you should have, maybe 100 county commissioners or board of supervisors down in L.A., right? That kind of thing?
Yeah, or if you were going to tie it to, she was saying how only 1,500 people lived here in 1853. Well, if you're going to tie it to population, we would have, you know, thousands of county commissioners. But, you know, the argument doesn't make any sense.
I know. And it doesn't make any sense, but of course you can go out there and use a stat there. And some rubes will sit there and nod their head, yeah, I get it. We should have more. Okay, please continue. What else did you find out?
And then, you know, the last part is the cost. And she even kind of begrudgingly said, yeah, it's kind of going to be a wash financially, but we're going to have those great, you know, extra people, and they're going to be responsive to us because they don't return my phone calls and all that stuff. And basically the rest of their talk was about fiscal responsibility, and it kind of got personal fast. She couldn't contain herself when it came to talking about Danny Jordan.
Oh, they hate him with a white hot passion. It's amazing.
Well, and you know, and Rick Dyer too, he's the county administrator. And you talk about, and it wasn't just her, the crowd too. It was like the renting of clothes and gnashing of teeth. And she said, yeah, that Rick Dyer and Jordan are having some kind of bromance.
Uh-huh.
And she, of course, spent the rest of the time accusing the commissioners of being secretive about financial matters, and that kind of that they're just for sale. And
really?
She proudly, the backdoor stuff. And also, we need to expand the commission, because what if one or two of them are sick? Then government comes to a grinding halt.
No, it doesn't.
Well, yay. Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate knowing how they're doing it. Like I said, they're very smart. They're very well organized. And they're also very, very wrong. And from our point of view, that's the way you have to look at it. And they want what they want, which is more power. And this is their way of going about it, Todd. It's pretty simple to me.
Yeah, and then they cried and bemoaned that Jordan makes like 140 grand a year. It's like, so what? You know, that's not that insane amount. I'll just interject this. She tried to conflate things. Like, she talked about how inefficient the county was and they make bad decisions. Like, they should have expanded the jail years ago, and now it's going to cost so much more to expand the jail, and they're so incompetent. Well, that measure was voted down by the
people.
Voters.
Yeah, the voter said no.
That did that.
Yeah, the voter said no. And there is no magic pile of money to be able to have a jail operating budget. And Jackson County's money is from $2 and a penny per thousand. It goes up 3% a year. And we're looking at inflation, real inflation, 4%, 5%, 6%, 7%, depending on who you talk to. And needless to say, you just can't do everything with $2 and a penny. There we go.
And then last thing I'll mention is that she flashed up kind of, I mean, it wasn't, it's public records, but it was kind of like doxing. It was, she was showing all the contributors to the opposition to the measures passing. Mm-hmm. And almost all of them were construction firms. And basically what she tried to imply was they're trying to buy influence with the county, like they're all in collusion and they're all dishonest. But guess who the top contributor was? It was only like $2,500, the Umpqua Tribe of Indians. And then she made a...
Oh my gosh, yeah. is she anti-tribal interests? I'm
normally
kidding.
Liberals fawn and grovel.
Oh, yeah. They fall over themselves, slobbering over Dances with Wolves politics, you know, is really what they do.
However, in this case, because the Umpqua tribe dared to side with her political opponents, apparently, she accused them of trying to buy influence with the county at the cost of the Coquille Indians. I was like, what? You know, show me the evidence, lady.
Oh, that's interesting. Hey, Todd, thank you for the report. Really appreciate that. And I know that's what an hour or two of your life that you'll never get back, but I appreciate you having done so. Okay.
Yeah, I did it so you didn't have to. Have a wonderful day, sir.
Thank you, Todd. Todd Farco. It is 7:31 at KMED, KCMD.
A recent Clouser Drilling customer shares her experience.
This is Susan from Griffin Creek. And listen, if you need a new well, I want you to call Clouser Drilling right away. They were absolutely fantastic. Everything from locating the water to the drilling process itself. Their staff was top-notch, thorough, professional, on time, precise, friendly. Answered all my questions, and believe me, I had a lot of them. You won't regret it. Call Clouser Drilling.
Visit ClouserDrilling.com.
This is Bill Meyer. Josephine County Republicans are sponsoring an all-day Patriots Conference this Saturday at the Joe County Fairgrounds from 10 to 6. Local leaders, endorsed candidates, 21 outstanding speakers will be there. Buy your tickets now at the Republican headquarters across from the courthouse in Grants Pass or online at jocogop.org. For more information about this Saturday's all-day Patriots Conference, including a schedule of speakers, drop by the headquarters or go to jocogop.org. Again, that's jocogop.org.
Oregon Truck and Auto Authority is your tonneau cover source. Tonneau covers are a great way to secure and protect the cargo in your bed from the elements. Styles from truck gear, back industries, undercover, and more. Oregon Truck and Auto Authority, your one-stop accessory and protection shop.
Hi, this is Bill Meyer, and I'm with Charisse from No Wires Now, your Dish Premier local retailer. It's time to switch to Dish.
If you have DirecTV or cable TV, call me today to see how I can save you money. Plus, I'll lower your internet and cell phone bills.
And those offers in the mail from Dish, you can go through No Wires Now for those.
Call me at 541-680-5875.
Call Charisse like I did or visit their showroom off Biddle Road in Medford, nowiresnow.com. Restrictions apply. Call for details. Internet and cell phone service not provided by Dish.
The Bill Meyer Show is on 106.3 KMED and 99.3 KCMD.
Really looking forward to talking to former Congressman Jody Heiss here in a few minutes about election integrity. Janet's here right now. Janet, you wanted to weigh in on life in a communist country and property redistribution. You have a great story. Tell me about that, please.
Yeah. A couple of years ago, my son and I toured China. And we were guests at a woman's home in Beijing. Mm-hmm. And this home was three stories with a yard. And the closer you are to the Forbidden City, that's why there are rings around it, the closer ring you're in, the more influential and wealthy that you are. Anyway, her family in the past was one of these people that had the big home in the third ring. Anyway, when things change, they now have guests. Families living in the second story and the third story.
Wow.
And there's even discussion about building another layer on top because they've taken her home and they've made it into a condominium unit or whatever. There's even families that they've taken the yard. And so that's influential people, but they took, like Dr. Zhivago, they took their home.
Yeah. Well, in other words, it's yours until the state wants it, right?
Yeah, until they've got a housing problem and they just think, well, you've got more than you need.
You have more? Than you need. You love that kind of thing. Janet, thanks for sharing the story from Eagle Point, okay?
I had one more thing real quick. You know, it really bothers me, and maybe I'm just so naive, but it seems to me the minute you tell people that a gallon of bleach can do that much damage, did you just not educate a whole bunch of people who can afford a gallon of bleach? That just really bothers me when they give the method because it's like,
Yeah, because you're thinking a gallon of bleach and 20,000 dead fish. You just don't think about it as being that destructive, but I guess in a hatchery.
I would never think to do such a thing, so it never entered my mind.
All right. I appreciate the call there. Thank you very much for that, Janet. Congressman Jody Tice will join me here in just a couple of minutes. Election integrity on the docket. Boy, it's on my mind, too. I'll tell you.
Well, you know, a doorless stove and spas we both recommend.
Let us tell you why.
Lamont here from Orley Stoves and Spas. Are you tired of those huge heating bills just to stay warm and comfortable in your own home? Then now is the time for a new wood, gas, or pellet stove from Orley Stoves and Spas. Orley's has Southern Oregon's largest inventory with over 400 stoves in stock now. Never be cold again. And for a limited time, receive a 30% tax credit on qualifying wood or pellet stoves and installation. Are you ready for a relaxing spring and summer enjoying your new pool, swim spa, or hot tub? Then Orleys has everything you need. We are fully stocked on Splash Around above ground pools and accessories. Orleys is Southern Oregon's largest Cal Spa dealer with over 55 spas and swim spas in stock now, as well as the shortest lead time of any dealer in the valley on any special order. Don't forget to ask us about our easy financing. Orleys Soaps and Spas at the corner of Delta Waters and Crater Lake Highway, Medford, 541-779-5340.
Hi, it's Jason at Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros. Through April, purchase a set of 4 Cooper tires for practically whatever you drive, and you'll get a Visa reward card in the mail. Get $100 on top of the line Cooper Discover STT Pro Mud Terrains or Cobra Instincts for your sports car. Get $75 on 5 styles of all-terrain truck tires, including the popular AT3 XLT, and get $50 on 3 styles of all-season passenger tires, including Endeavor. Save on Cooper tires at Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros.
Millett Construction has been a general contractor for 40 years. For the last 20 years, they've specialized in foundation repair and replacement. If you have sloping floors, cracks in walls, and windows and doors that are hard to open, you have a foundation problem that's only getting worse. At Millett Construction, they not only fix your foundation and level your house, they solve the water problem that's causing the damage. Get on solid ground. Call Millett Construction for a free estimate. Visit MilletteConstruction.com. CCB number 32787.
This hour of the Bill Meyer Show is proudly sponsored by Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros on Main Street in Phoenix.
Hi, I'm Mark with Oregon Truck and Auto Authority, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
Congressman Jody Heiss joins me, currently a senior vice president at the Family Research Council and president of FRC Action. It's a prominent American evangelical activist group, rather, I should say. And it's also a think tank in Washington, D.C. Now, Heiss is a Republican congressman from the state of Georgia. You ended up leaving Congress, it was last year. Isn't that right, Congressman? Welcome back. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Bill. Great to be with you. Appreciate you having me. But yes, I ran for Secretary of State in Georgia. I go over all that in the book, but I've been out of Congress for a little over a year now.
And you know something, Congressman, I can't help but notice that I'm getting a lot of people on the show this week who have been talking about election integrity, and that's what your new book, Sacred Trust, is all about. But the moment that you are into election integrity and questioning the narrative, oh my gosh, your Wikipedia entry, which of course is edited by the leftists of the world, that's the way that ends up working, conspiracy theorist. I mean, do you wear that as a badge of honor? Just kind of curious.
And it's funny you mentioned a Wikipedia. I mean, they've got hold of mine and changed it all up. I can't even change it back. Every time I go in to correct it, it automatically it changes back. So, I mean, that's pretty nuts. But, yeah, we have come. Look, it was during COVID, Bill. I was a senior member on the Oversight Committee. And when we had our first case of COVID in the United States, it was the very next week that Democrats started holding hearings and oversight about the need to federalize elections and change our election laws. And they started pushing this narrative over and over and over and gaining momentum while the rest of us were wondering what in the world is COVID going to mean for me and my family and so forth. The Democrats were in oversight pushing for election reform. And then they added the layer, which really got me involved. This was the main thing when they started saying, in addition to COVID, we've got voter suppression all across the country. And Exhibit A of that is Georgia, which I knew better. So I started pushing back on all of this. And then the push continually in the midst of the early days of COVID to change our election laws, it just smelled like a rat to me. Of course, I didn't have a crystal ball to see what was coming, but I was so disturbed that while the rest of the world, the rest of the country was concerned about what COVID is going to mean to our families and so forth, the Democrats were pushing for election reform. And I just had come to learn whenever there's smoke like that, there's something going on. And so that's what kind of got me involved with election integrity. And in many regards, at least from the state of Georgia, I kind of became the tip of the spear on that issue.
Jody is a founding member, by the way, of the House Freedom Caucus. And, of course, House Freedom Caucus finds themselves under a lot of attack right now, even from Republicans. Would you agree with that? Is that the same sort of thing? Did that happen to you back then in those days?
Yeah, we've always been under the attack. The Freedom Caucus kind of becomes a scapegoat for anything that's not going right within the Republican Party. It's always the fault of the Freedom Caucus, it seems. But look, I loved my time with the Freedom Caucus. That's one area that I miss to this day. It is a group of men and women who are in Congress for the purpose of being a voice for millions of Americans who believe they've lost their voice in Washington, D.C. And that's a group that they're there for the right reasons. They're not there just to be reelected. They are fully aware that we are in the crossroads of losing our country, and they're doing everything they can in their power to stop it, to turn it around, to slow it down, whatever they can. But yeah, they get blamed for taking their efforts to try to stop the current direction that's so destructive to the freedoms that we've always had in this country.
Had you been in Congress at this point? Because the one thing I'm noticing is that a lot of national talk show hosts, I mean, Hugh Hewitt is an example, who we have on, you know, earlier in the morning, end up referring to the Freedom Caucus as the knuckleheads. He always calls them the knucklehead caucus is what he likes to. And that kind of irritates me. And it's not that I think the Freedom Caucus is always perfect on every issue. Okay, I'm not saying that. But there seems to be a real resistance to want to have any kind of real conservatism thought out of Congress. Would that be a fair assessment of what it's like?
Yeah, absolutely. And so what's your alternative? Let's just continue with the status quo. Hey, how's that working out for us? It's the status quo that's given us open borders and inflation out the roof and destroying our economy and our military and our global respect around the country. The loss of our freedoms, the more intrusive government and spying into our lives, that's what you get with the status quo when you have a group of individuals, a Freedom Caucus, who are fighting tooth and nail with everything they can to stop that kind of nonsense from taking place and the destruction of our liberties that we've always had in this country. And yet we're referred to, not surprisingly, as the so-called knuckleheads. It's the knuckleheads, frankly, are the ones that are embracing status quo and who want things to continue as they have been going, which is a slow demise, a driving off the cliff of our country. And people need to understand that we're at a point that we can't just continue embracing the status quo.
Yeah,
that's not helpful. It's destructive.
Speaking of the status quo, what is your impression of the before? And we'll get back to the book here in just a minute here. But how would you have? How would you, or give me your impression then of not only the reauthorizing of FISA Section 702, and there seemed to have been like a collapse done by Speaker Johnson, you know, the men in gray suits come from the CIA, and all of a sudden, well, that means the Constitution must be shredded, you know, that kind of thing. And what do you think about the vote this week, everybody passing the foreign aid bill for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan? What do you think about that?
Yeah, look, I'm concerned with all of this. And again, it's a demonstration how we have a group of people trying to stop this, trying to stop our government from spying on us. Look, I don't particularly care what is heard in a SCIF in a classified environment. I've been in those meetings multiple times. Number one, you can't guarantee that the information they're giving you is all true. But secondly, nothing they give you overrides our Constitution. And our Fourth Amendment has not evaporated simply because someone says, hey, we have people who have ill intent in our country. Well, then why don't we start by closing the border that's allowing these people to come into our country?
Yeah.
Instead of punishing American citizens and spying on American citizens and taking away their Fourth Amendment, why don't we deal with the problem?
Yeah.
And that would begin at the southern border. And that applies also with what was voted on this past week. Look, why in the world are we continuing to defend the borders of Ukraine when we refuse to defend our own borders? That was the line in the sand that the Freedom Caucus was trying to say. We must protect our borders before we protect everyone else's borders. And that was the issue they were trying to raise. And unfortunately, that was not successful.
Congressman, do you believe intelligence has dirt on the people? Is that why they act as if they're captured individuals in Congress? I mean, you having been in there, you're no longer in Congress. What are your thoughts on that?
There's multiple reasons why people cave. I recall being in orientation week 9 years ago, my very first week there. I was told, look, you're here because you want to move the needle. You want to make a difference in Congress. If you want to do that, then you need to get on the right committees. And, well, that sounds good. Number one, it's not true. You can be influential without being on whatever committee. So the whole premise was false. But then they emphasize get on the right committees that you want to be on. But then in order to get on those committees, we need you to vote this way. We need you to vote that way. And immediately you begin down a path of compromise before you ever even get started. And once you compromise in D.C., it's all over. But it's that. It's threats of and they do. It happened to me and many others, mostly Freedom Caucus type people. They dry up your fundraising if you don't vote the way they want you to vote. So you can't get any fundraising in Washington. Bills that you want to get to the floor, things that are important to you, they won't allow to be voted on unless you vote the way they want you to do in this type of thing. So there are multiple reasons that people begin to compromise, and to me, that's just tragic. You've got to keep your moral compass. You've got to know what you believe, why you believe it, and unwilling to come off that wall if you're going to really hold the line in D.C. because there are so many deceptive methods of offering and actually engaging in compromise that you're not even aware of until it's too late. And one of those I actually mentioned in the book with a personal example. So you've got to.
And by the way, that book is, excuse me, Congressman, I want to make sure people know about this book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity and the Will of the People by former Congressman Jody Heiss. So tell us about one of those compromises you were talking about that you knew about.
Yeah, again, it goes back to orientation week. I had run on the fact that I was not going to vote for John Boehner. And I felt like we needed a change in leadership. So the vote, which I was not aware of at the time, really is a two-step process. You have the conference vote where the Republican Party, in that case, we were all together and we had a vote for Speaker of the House. And it was done by purposefully and intimidation by voice vote because they didn't want anyone going against Boehner. So they said, all in favor of Boehner, say aye, and all opposed, no. Well, I yelled out as loud as I could, no. And I still hear my voice echoing through that chamber, no. Because that's what I said I was going to do. Well, after that, I was soon surrounded by Boehner people and even conversations with he himself saying, look, you did what you said you would do. You told your constituents you would not support Boehner. You did not. But now you heard what our conference did. They want Boehner. So now is the time for us to be unified. So now we go to the floor to vote. And this is the time. This is just a stamp vote of what we just did here in the conference. So when you go down there, you know, it's a time to be a team player. You did your job. Well, so we went to the floor and I supported Boehner having been deceived. And it was the worst day of my life. I go into detail of that in the book, but it was also the greatest lesson I could have ever learned starting my career in Congress, that these people will give you a massive deception and outright lie to you. The vote on the floor was the key vote, but that's not what they told me. But anyways, that is just one example I learned my first week and it was a valuable lesson that carried me for the next 8 years.
Former Congressman Jody Heiss, in his book, A Sacred Trust, Election Integrity and the Will of the People. You started off this conversation here, Congressman. Well, Democrats, supposedly opposition party, you know, they had a plan, apparently, to, it sounds to me like when you're talking about COVID breaks out, this comes out, and it's near election season, and the first thing that the Democrats are doing, oh, we have to do something about the elections. Do you believe, this being Conspiracy Theory Thursday, that there was already a plan in place, just ready to be, you know, spring the trap when something like this occurred?
You know, obviously, I can't confirm that. I wasn't behind the scenes. I don't know how they did all that, but I can tell you how I felt as a member of the Oversight Committee. I certainly felt like something is going on here that I could not pinpoint, and that's what began raising all sorts of red flags. And I often wondered how, number one, how could they do this when the Constitution says that the time, place, and manners are to be left to the individual states, not the federal government?
Mm-hmm.
How are they calling for a federalized takeover, if you will, of the election processes? But what I came to see is what they were doing was laying the groundwork for states to do. And that happened by, be it governors or secretary of states or whomever, using COVID as a reason to take emergency powers and thereby unilaterally changing election laws in those various states and implementing the very things that the Democrats were pushing for on the federal level in some of those hearings. And I look back and I like, it's stunning how so many states unilaterally had decisions to change election laws, things that never would have been, I believe, would never have been accepted or voted on through those state legislatures, but they were done by unilateral decisions by individuals or small groups of people, and COVID was the excuse. And now we're behind the eight ball trying to change some of those disastrous election decisions and come back to a sense of election integrity and maintaining and protecting the voice of the people.
Has anything really changed as we head into the 2024 presidential election cycle in November?
Well, a lot of states have. My state, my home state of Georgia, has done a great job, I believe. We'll see with this upcoming election, but they've made great attempts at securing the elections and fixing the damage that was done through all that COVID stuff. Many states have done a good job with that. Unfortunately, many states have not. And that's where it comes back to, again, the voice of the people. We are a country based upon the consent of the governed, not the consent of the governing.
And really,
the most sacred place of that is the ballot box. And of all things, what must be protected is the voice of the people there at the voting booth. You know, elections at the end of the day, you know, they're not about who wins or who loses. Elections are about the voice of the people being accurately heard and accounted for. And that's what elections do. It is the voice of the people, the consent of the governed being demonstrated and accurately reported so that the people determine who their representatives are going to be and thereby the policies under which they're going to live. And if ever that sacred place of voting is compromised, then the voice of the people is removed and eradicated. And that's what I'm trying to drive back, that the voice of the people must be protected, and that takes place at the ballot box.
Now, in the state of Oregon, we are exclusively vote by mail. That's all they do. Voters, very unwisely in my view, kind of went for convenience a number of years ago. We were doing this long before it became fashionable, I suppose. I don't think you can have vote by mail in really much of any form and truly have a secure election. I mean, do you? I mean, how is it? Where's the chain of custody? Even this fall, our ballots are going to go up to Portland before they're coming back because of mail sorting changes. It's interesting stuff.
Yeah,
what do you think?
That raises all sorts of potential problems. Even Jimmy Carter. Let's go back to the Blue Ribbon Commission and Jimmy Carter and James Baker back in, I think it was 2005, and on elections, they came out in their report stating that mail-in ballots are problematic and they increase dramatically the possibility for fraud. That's coming from Democrats. It was not long ago both sides of the aisle clearly recognized the potential dangers and hazards with mail-in ballots. But again, COVID became the springboard for excusing all of that and enforcing upon the American people all sorts of things that I believe have turned up our election integrity upside down.
How do you believe we can turn this back? Do you think there's a way to turn it back here? I know you have other people to talk to, so I don't want to, you know, waste any time on this. But, you know, how do we get this back at this point? Because it feels like it has gotten so everybody going for convenience rather than actually going for security that I don't know if we can get it back at this point. Because, you know, how do you vote for getting it back if you can't even really be sure that you're getting an accurate count and even accurate people on the rolls themselves here, Congressman?
Yeah, convenience cannot be the determining factor of the way we vote. If ever there was a time for convenience to be the determination, it would have been in the early days of our country when people didn't have internet and mail and automobiles, when they had to walk or ride by horse hours at a time, sometimes days at a time, to cast a vote on a particular day, not a series of days or weeks. That is when convenience probably would have been a handy item, but they didn't want it. Convenience was not the issue. Accuracy was the issue. Election integrity was the issue. But now we've entered an era where the number one thing we want is convenience. And what that does is open up also the potential, the possibility of all sorts of problems. We have got to get back to understand that elections are not about convenience. Elections are about the will of the people. It's about the voice of the people. And it's about that voice being accurately heard and accounted for. Therefore, anything and everything that poses a potential threat of an accurate accounting of the people's voice must be dealt with. And, you know, in many instances, absolutely done away with. So we've just got to keep, this is not something that can be swept under the rug. This is an issue that the people must keep on the front and center of the radar of their representatives to deal with and demand that our voice be accurately heard and accounted for. In some states, such as yours, is probably going to be a long process.
Yeah.
But we can't let go of it. We've got to continue that fight until we ultimately secure elections.
If you would give me your top three agendas to change this and that you'll be covering in Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, what would those be about our election?
There are many of them, but right off the top of my head, I would say one of the key ones is accurate voter files. How in the world can we have an accurate election if we have files that we don't even know who's a legally registered individual to vote in the first place or not? I believe it was the week before last, I saw an article that said the average state is somewhere between 8 and 18% inaccurate in their voter files. Well, I mean, if we're starting with 10 to 20% inaccuracy with who's even allowed to vote, that's problematic. But then I believe the mail-in ballots are a problem. The majority of Americans want photo identification to prove that you are who you say you are before you cast a ballot. Signature verifications, the ballot harvesting. I mean, there are a host of issues that just are glaring potential problems, and all of these need to be addressed, and I deal with these and a host of others in the book.
Very good. Former Congressman Jody Heiss once again, and the book he has out now, just out, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People. This is going to be a very important read. I'm looking forward to digging more into this. Congressman, thanks for your work, and I'm sorry you're still not there on the Freedom Caucus, but do you think we're going to have a larger conservative turnout in the fall, or do you think that Freedom Caucus may actually get larger over time, or do you think that the current era is going to be just more pressure brought to bear on people like Marjorie Taylor Greene?
I think the Freedom Caucus is going to continue to grow. Every election cycle that I experienced while being in Congress, they grew. The American people are wanting people representing them who are not going to cave every opportunity they have, but who are actually going to do what they said they would do. We in the Freedom Caucus often refer to ourselves as the Republican wing of the Republican Party. We actually did what the platform says we would do, and I believe that's what the American people want when they elect a Republican. So I think the Freedom Caucus will continue to grow and expand its influence.
Very good. Congressman, I appreciate you being on. Thanks for the time. Hope to have you back at some point. You be well.
Thank you.
It's a shade before 8 o'clock. This is KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KCMD Grants Pass, Translator K294, AS Ashland.
Looking.